Hi, welcome everybody. My name is Ernesto Palomino. Welcome to the American Experience podcast, where we will be focusing on everything from the culture, the American experience from different individuals that are in the arts, where there's construction, military, just anything that really, really adds to the experience. And culture-wise, you know, it doesn't really need to be a specific topic, but anything that we find intriguing and as far as culture value into it, for sure. So I want to introduce Angelica Guerra. She works for Empire Roofing in our El Paso office. I also say we because I actually work for Empire as well. I'm a part of the marketing department. And last week, we did a video honoring veterans. And she was really gracious enough to share that story about her dad, who was a World War II vet and has a really cool, just a really cool story. Obviously, everyone that has served and just served in that war, I think is just probably one of the best, I would say, generations in American history. But what I thought was really unique was the fact that, you know, him being a Mexican-American, and we obviously don't hear enough stories about these Hispanic and Latino veterans who served during the war. I thought that it was just a really cool, heartfelt story that she shared with me. And I wanted to just kind of give an opportunity for everyone to kind of hear that story. And, you know, she was really gracious enough to come on. And as I told her, I was like, you know, it's my first episode. It's not something that I've ever really done. But I wanted to kind of put that energy out there and see what would happen. And so just to kind of kick it off, Angelica, I'll open the floor to you, you know, introduction to yourself, and just kind of we'll take it from there.
Okay, my name is Angelica Guerra. I was born and raised in El Paso. I've worked for Empire Roofing for 12 years now, and I'm the office manager here at the local office. And like Ernesto was saying, he's the one that called me last week and, you know, touched base with me when I submitted the picture of my dad. This picture I sent him, he was like 18 years old, so he was still a baby to me. Right. Started asking me questions. It was pretty cool.
And you know, one of the things that I shared with you was that I really am a big fan of history, and to have that story with you, to me, it was like your dad was a walking piece of history. And I think sometimes it is regretful that we don't, I think within our culture, we do revere our elders a little bit more. Like our grandparents are always the ones that live in the back room of the house. But we do have some sort of reverence for them. And, you know, it's sometimes, you know, to come across a veteran that served in a historic time, whether it's been Vietnam or even Afghanistan, even as recent, sometimes we don't really kind of sit to kind of absorb that, you know, moment to kind of converse with them. And it's not because, oh, tell me about the gruesome stuff that you saw, but it's more of a, you know, hey, what, you know, what was the motive for you, or what made you, obviously, whether it was political or maybe it's just about the brotherhood that they feel, or if it was a duty for them to, at the time, to be like, it's an honor thing, like, I must go over there. So from that perspective, like, I think I want to start with just the genesis of his life in El Paso and during the time and that time in Texas, and what, you know, and when he got drafted. Like, I mean, I can only imagine, right? Like, you have to go. Like, it's not like it's optional, right? It's more of like, now you're going. So I guess like the fear, or maybe the unknown, maybe he was just like, yeah, I'm ready to go and kill Nazis. I mean, I don't know, but it was just kind of starting from that starting point of like what he might have felt at that time and what he did kind of share from the beginning of that period for him. As you said, he was a baby. So just kind of walk us through a little bit of what that part of his life was like in the beginning.
Well, he, like I had mentioned to you before, he was the youngest sibling. So he was the baby of the family. And he was drafted right before his graduation from high school. And he was shipped over to Germany and that's where he served his time. And I do remember him saying that there was some days that he was just so afraid, but he had a lot of faith. His mother had a lot of faith, so he had a lot of faith, and he relied on that a lot to get him through the rough days and the hard days and the days of seeing a lot of his friends die and have to deal with that.
Now, was he part of a specific, like, was he part of the first wave of soldiers that went over there, or was he part of the invasion of Normandy, or did he like parachute in somewhere, or how did he kind of end up in the European theater?
If I remember correctly, they were just brought in when Normandy happened. Mm-hmm. But how he exactly got there, I really don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even like, do you recall anything that your grandmother probably shared with you at the time as to how she felt when she knew that her son had to go over there?
Well, she was devastated, of course, because my dad went at the same time as his cousin, which is my grandmother's sister's son. Mm-hmm. And they were both the same age and stuff, and he didn't make it home. And it was so odd because my dad says that he remembers that day, it's like he woke up and he knew he was his time, because he went to the platoon, what do you call the chappies, not the chappies, the priest. Mm-hmm. He went to the priest and asked him to give him a blessing, because he knew his day was coming, and he died that day.
Wow.
And my dad used to talk about that, and he'd get really teary-eyed and stuff, but I remember him talking about that. And of course my aunt was inconsolable for a very, very long time, because that was her only son. Mm-hmm. And I don't think now that, I don't know how the military does it now, but for only children, do they still, I mean, if there was a draft, would they still take them? I don't know.
Well, you know, I don't claim to be a military expert, since I've never served, but I believe that if you are an only child, they don't, I could be wrong, but I think that was the premise of like the whole Saving Private Ryan movie, that he was the only surviving brother, and they wanted to send him back home because his other three brothers had all been killed in combat. I can tell you from, you know, when I was in high school, when September 11th happened, I was a senior in high school, and I mean, it was just like the recruiters didn't have to approach us. It was like a lot of my friends were like running in droves to go join Marines. Like, I have a lot of Marine friends that served. A couple of them went to the Navy, Air Force. And I was one of those that wanted to go and join the Air Force. But I don't know if you know this, but me being a dreamer, they just didn't take me. I don't know if it was a blessing in disguise or what, but it was a saving grace. But at the time, I remember they didn't accept me because I was not an American citizen. But I don't know if that's exactly the way they do it now, but I have heard before that, yeah, if you're like the only child, they don't necessarily take you, but who knows? I don't know if, I mean, I would assume if you're just determined to go, they would probably, you know, walk around some channels to make it happen. But I just can't confirm that. But but at that time, I would imagine that, you know, comparing it to like, if, you know, if the Saving Private Ryan movie, from that standpoint, if that was the real goal was because he was the only left son, then I would think that there is some merit to that.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. You know, also with him being drafted as young as he was, I often think too, like during his life in El Paso, you know, how was El Paso like at the time? If your grandmother's ever shared anything, and obviously your his firsthand experience as, you know, as he was growing up, because I think I mentioned this to you, where that sometimes we forget that our parents were our age at one point. And mm-hmm. It's like, you know, was he life in El Paso at the time, which was what, the 30s, 40s?
In the 40s, yeah. 40s.
So how was life for him at the time? Like, let's go back a little bit prior to him being drafted. Like, he was born in El Paso, right, and raised?
Yes.
Okay, and so how was life like at the time?
Well, I mean, he worked to help support his mom. She worked at, there was this huge, huge laundromat that I guess would clean uniforms and stuff like that, and that's where she worked. And of course, she didn't make a lot of money, so my dad would take, you know, odd and end jobs here and there to, you know, to try and help out at home. And when he came back from the service, he took care of her financially 100%.
Wow. And so did he come from a big family?
He had a brother and a sister that were much older than him. There's like a 15-year difference between him and his brother.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, there was a pretty big gap.
And so was he the youngest?
Yes, he was the youngest.
Wow. And so the other ones didn't get to serve, am I right?
No, he's the only one. He's the only one. His brother never served in the military.
Wow. And did most, well, obviously you do have family that still have roots there. So as far as like when Veterans Day or Memorial Day comes, is there a special type of, obviously other than what the nation does, but is there a certain remembrance that you guys have for them? Or for him, I'm sorry.
Flowers for at the cemetery. I mean, he's buried at the military cemetery here in El Paso, Fort Bliss National Cemetery. That's where he was laid to rest. And it's a pretty big cemetery. It's not as big as Arlington, but it's a pretty big cemetery.
And would you say that perhaps a lot of those resting there are from the Latino, on the Latino side?
Oh yeah, definitely. You when you see all the different headstones and stuff, you see a lot of Hispanic names, a lot.
And that's the thing that I just think that it was so cool on one side of what you shared with me, because you know, that's not really something that is really talked about a lot. You know, I feel like you know, Latinos are pretty much underrepresented when it comes to the war films that we see as well, because you know, I think we touched on a couple of those films with Fury, and how Michael Peña was one of like was representative of that, you know. And I think even watching some of those special features, the director talked about that, how he wanted to represent the Latino perspective from that, because they were involved. And him being just, I think in my personal opinion, I think he's one of the great like actors, Latino actors that are out there right now. And I thought it was really something that kind of touched me, that I was like, you know what, that is true. Like, let me do a little bit of research on this and find out, you know, the many Latinos that served. And yeah, I was like really amazed that it's just been something that, I don't know, for whatever reason, it's not something that's ever really much talked about. But you know, I do also remember you telling me that he was a Purple Heart recipient. And did he ever share how he got that, the medal?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question very good. What was it again?
When you mentioned in our conversation that he had been a Purple Heart recipient. Oh, I'm sorry. A Purple Heart recipient? Oh. Did he ever mention what? Or how the mission that he got on, that he went on to receive it?
They had gone through one of the German concentration camps, and he was with his platoon, and it was actually one of the guys that was with him that saved his life, because my father was shot on the side of his face and on his head, like, we know where your eye is, so go down about an inch. Wow. And the bullet went in right there. And he completely lost his hearing in that ear. And he was in the hospital, and they shipped him to a hospital in England. And he was there for like 6 months before they shipped him back to the States for recovery. But he said that he remembers being shot, and his friend that was with him applied pressure somehow on the wound, and that kept him from bleeding out, and how he didn't end up with more severe damage than what he did is probably a miracle. because to me, I mean, normally people, when they get shot in the head or the face, those aren't really survivable, mm-hmm. you know, wounds. But I think he had a purpose to come home, and, you know, he had a little guardian angel watching him, and that's why he made it home. And he did. You could see the dimple. It looked like a, probably just a little bit smaller than a penny. Mm-hmm. So he has a dimple on that side of his, on that side of his face where the bullet went in.
Wow. And even then, like, once he did come home, and, you know, obviously, like, going through something like that obviously stays with you, and not just physically, obviously, because of the scar, but, you know, emotionally, and I think internally, is just probably something that he just kind of, I guess, you know, I wouldn't assume to speak for him, of course, but for him to just kind of put that in the back of his mind as far as he could, but to survive something like that. And something that you touched on was, you know, I know movies kind of give us a different perspective. And I know you mentioned that you took him to watch Saving Private Ryan, and he was tearful about it. But can you kind of go into a little bit as to why he had that reaction?
He's seen a lot of war movies from, like, Midway back in when that came out in the 40s or 50s or whatever, and all, you know, other military movies that have come out. And he said that Saving Private Ryan was the most realistic to what he had experienced when he was over there. So, I mean, that kind of, like, put us aback, because it's like, oh my God, I know it's a movie, but for him to say that that's what he went through, that the fear that he felt when they were being shot at, and I don't know how to explain it, but to see that movie and for my dad to say that's how he felt, that was like, wow.
Right.
And he said that from all the movies, he says that's the most realistic one he had ever seen. That came close to what he went through.
And from a fear perspective, like, I couldn't even imagine that. Like, the fear that a lot of these young men probably felt was probably something that, I mean, I don't know. Like, because, you know, you're going into combat. Like, as soon as, like, I remember seeing the opening scene of that movie, and they're in those floating compartments that they're about to reach, I believe it was Normandy. As soon as you see that they open those hatches, it's like dead. Or a lot of them that jumped overboard, they drowned. It's like, how do you not? It's just, I don't know, like, if it's like the hand of God for sure that has to be upon you for you to. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know, like, it, to me, it's almost like you have no words to kind of explain that type of courage. Like, but even then, like, and I don't know what his political stance were at the time, but did he ever talk about his I guess from his perspective, like, was he more of like, I'm going because I'm going to go eradicate the world from this evil, or was he like, I'm just going because it's my duty, or I'm going because they're telling me to go? Like, what kind of sense of pride did he have, not just one going, but then surviving it and knowing that
go ahead.
On the back end, was to say, and did he feel a sense of pride because he did help eradicate and change the history of the world? Because had we not had a foothold in Normandy, then who knows if little things like those victories that don't happen, then it turns the war, you know? Did he ever have that sense of pride or did he, and like I said, I don't know what his political leanings were, but whether it was Democrat, Republican, Independent, but I don't think none of that probably matters. It's more of like, I'm going because I'm going to go eradicate the world of evil. Or was he more of like, I'm going because it's my duty or honor. But you can probably talk more to that, obviously.
I think with what he would say and the way he would talk, I think he did it because he felt that he needed to. And he was always very proud of the service that he had, that you know, he had been there. he always had his flag on his truck. He always had a flag at the house. And he just felt proud that he did something to try and make the world a better place.
Yeah, it's heartfelt for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And over the years after, you know, he many years after, of course, and came back. And obviously, when you became of age and so forth, how often would he talk about it? Was he more of like, ask me, or kind of a, hey, Grandpa, how did this go down? Or was he kind of open?
No, you really had to ask him if he wouldn't just talk about it. Mm-hmm. I think it was just too hard on him mm-hmm. to talk about it, seeing so many of his friends die and stuff. So, but if you asked him, he would tell you. He'd start talking and telling you stories and tell you the fear that he felt, and then coming home and having to, you know, put his life back in order is to figure out what he was going to do now that he couldn't serve in the military anymore because he was honorably discharged mm-hmm. due to the injury, of course. So, you know, then he came home and started working and taking care of his mom. Mm-hmm.
And obviously, making that transition from, you know, that experience back to just like, okay, now you're back to home, peace time, you know, in trend, it couldn't have been just like a light switch on and off, right? I'm sure there was a sense of like, okay, well, what do I do now? You know,
probably not. I, you know, he never said if he had. I know as he got older, you know, and I understood. I don't remember him ever like waking up from having bad nightmares and stuff like that. I don't know if he had that when he was younger. He may have, mm-hmm. but he never talked about that if he did.
I gotcha. One of the things that I do want you to kind of just go into a little bit was that story of him being identified by a German lady. And the fear that he probably went through, but then how eventually it came out on the other end. I don't want to say or preview it for you, but go ahead and talk a little bit about that story.
Okay. On that day, somehow him and one of his friends had gotten separated from their platoon, mm-hmm. and it was really cold, and they were hungry, and they came upon this farmhouse. And it had chickens, so they were going to go steal the eggs so they could make something to eat. Well, the lady of the house was home, and she caught them in the yard. And they were, of course, terrified because, you know, their first thing is she's going to turn us over to the German soldiers. You know, we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And the lady was German, of course. She spoke no English, and she just kind of gestured them inside. So they, you know, they followed. They didn't, you know, argue or anything. They just went in there and... when they walk into the house, she shows them a picture on the mantle of a young man. And my father feels, and that's probably what it was, that the young man in the photo was her German army son. Mm-hmm. He was in the military. So she turned around and made them something to eat and then sent them on their merry way. So my father always said that he felt that she had fed them because they were in the same boat that her son was, even though he was on the opposing side, and probably hoping that someone would do something good for her son like she did for them. And when she fed them, they left, and they never went back into that, you know, to see her again.
Wow. It's those things that connect us as human beings, and not because we wear a different uniform or, you know, we're of a different race or culture. And yeah, and I think I had shared with you also, I think it was a PBS documentary that I had seen. It was called the Game of Soccer That No One Ever Knew Happened. And it happened between these GIs that were also entrenched during the wintertime. I think it was Christmas, towards the end of the war. And they were basically pinned down by these German soldiers. And if I could be wrong, but I think it was Christmas or Christmas Eve, and they decided for the sake of the holiday to put their guns down and they played a game of soccer. And it was at nighttime, and then after that they went back to war the next day. But for those brief hours, they were just soccer players. And I believe one of them, after the war was over, and I think, you know what, actually I think it was Band of Brothers, and he went on to say that, you know, had we not been at war, this guy could have been like my best friend. So coming from a firsthand experience that your father had there, it's, yeah, I think he was right. You know, it's for a total stranger, and not only someone that doesn't even speak your language, to do something that I guess for humanly, like, just basic, something as food, to bring that perspective of like, hey, you know, if my son was in the same place, I would expect for someone to try to do the same thing for him. So I thought that was really like the bow of the story that you told me. I was like, wow, I have to like share that. But I didn't want to share it with my own words. I thought it'd be obviously more meaningful coming from you. And okay, so then now after like he comes home, you know, transitions into civilian life, and then obviously becomes husband, father, and then grandfather, towards the end of his, I guess, and you mentioned to me, he did pass away not too long ago. And what kind of things, I would say things, stories, memories kind of last with you from his time after the war and being your grandpa?
Well, he came home, and like I said, he started working, taking care of his mother. And I remember the day he said, the first time he saw my mom, he was out with his buddies, and they were just on some street. They lived over here in central El Paso at the time. Mm-hmm. And my mom was walking with some other person, I don't remember who. And my dad saw her for the first time, and he told his friends, "You see that girl? I'm going to marry her." And his friends are like, "Yeah, right." 6 months later, they were walking down the aisle. And the way he proposed to her was he took her to the movie theater. And apparently my mom used to always wear some particular ring on her ring finger. Uh-huh. Well, my dad, while he was watching the movie, playing with her hands, he kind of slipped that ring off the finger and slipped the engagement ring. He's like kind of sly little dog there.
That's how it goes out sometimes.
and they got married. And they were married for 49 years before he passed away. And their wedding picture was always hung at my parents' home. Mm-hmm. And I asked my dad one day, I said, "Dad, you're really not that tall. Why is there such a difference between you and mom?" And he fessed up. He said that, you know, because my dad was only about, I guess, maybe an inch taller than my mother. Mm-hmm. And to make it look, the photographer thought to make it look, you know, a lot nicer, the picture. Mm-hmm. He got one of those cases of soda that they sell in Juarez in Mexico.
Yes.
He stood him on that to take the picture.
Oh.
So after that, I started calling my dad Shorty. And that name stuck to him for forever. And then I grew taller than him, so it was even easier to call him Shorty. But he was always my Shorty. That was his nickname. Oh,
once you grew to be taller than him, was he ever like, "How did you get this tall?"
Yeah, and I was like, "Dad, what happened to you?" Because my mom's pretty little, but my dad, you know, my dad was only 5'7". Uh-huh. So to me, that was short because I'm 5'9". So it's like, all right, you know, I used to tease him about that all the time. But he would just get such a kick out of it.
Oh, wow. Bless his heart.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And finally, when, you know, they buried him with honors, and you told me a little bit about how there was a touching moment from his childhood. One of the visitors that happened, that showed up and to pay his respects. And just kind of tell me a little bit about that.
Well, that day really for me was a real blur. If you asked me who was at the funeral, I couldn't tell you. Mm-hmm. Except for this one gentleman. When we were at the cemetery, the soldiers came out and they played taps. And this older gentleman comes up, and he's got his World War II veteran cap on, and we're all kind of like, who's that? And, you know, we didn't say anything of it. He walked up to the casket and put a flower and walked away. And then when the service was over, my sister went and politely asked him, you know, who he was, how he knew my father and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the gentleman's name, unfortunately, but he said that he knew my father from elementary school and he had seen the obit in the paper. And that he felt he needed to come and pay his respect because he was also a veteran. So that's why he showed up to the funeral. After so many years, this gentleman remembered my dad from elementary.
Wow.
I think my dad was smiling down from heaven at him, happy that he was there.
Wow.
I thought that was so cool. Such a sweet little old man. I can still see his face. Such a sweet little old man.
Yeah, and it's a testament to the type of impact that I feel sometimes as human beings. That's really what energy and the type of how people may see you sometimes that you may not even acknowledge just by being nice to people or, you know, just, you know, I mean, in elementary, we're all kids, you know, so we're all still so innocent. And, you know, and I can imagine life was probably a lot simpler back then for them where, maybe perhaps hide and go seek or playing, you know, cops, you know, robbers and cops or, you know, Indians and cowboys was probably something that was, or even trading baseball cards, you know, and following the American pastime of the times, that they probably shared some sort of, you know, kinship that stayed with this gentleman. And years later, he, you know, we come full circle. And you know, one thing to also highlight as we kind of wrap up our conversation is that, you know, in years, mind you, after, and I mean not ever meeting your father, but for us to have a conversation about his legacy now even speaks to that, as to how, you know, unintentionally he touched even my life, where it's like, you know what, that is so powerful that somebody else's experience can have an impact on me. And just to have the energy to say, hey, I want to share this with other people, you know, it's really, really cool.
That means a lot. Thank you.
Oh yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for not only making the time, but to go down memory lane. I don't presume to think that, you know, it's an easy thing to always talk about, especially you telling me how much obviously he meant to you, and adding, you know, of course, the historical aspect of it. But you know, he was your father, and you know, when we get down to, like, I'm sure he didn't walk around like, oh, I'm Captain America, but
no,
you know, to you like, you share the story about Shorty and all that, like, he was just your dad, you know, and just having that lens of like a family man, someone that was hardworking and, you know, did his duty, and you know, something that, you know, we as Latinos and obviously Mexicanos, we can identify with, you know. So I think from that perspective, I think it's it was a story that I felt like it needed to be heard. Once again, you know, I thank you for the time. I know it's a Saturday, but I'm sure you got a lot of things to do. But I want to definitely thank you for the time and sharing this wonderful story with us. To me, I as being my first episode, I got to tell you, it was not a second thought that I was like, this is going to be my first episode. Like, I have to do this. So thank you for that.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. It means, it really, really does mean a lot.
So, you know, I know your niece was going to, she's also a World War II, I would say, researcher. And please, you know, if she ever wants to come on later on and we have a specific topic, I'd love to get her on. And, you know, we can talk about certain aspects of it. But definitely thank you for the time again. And I'll definitely reach out to you during the week.
Okay, Ernesto, thank you so much.
Thank you. Much love.
Have a great weekend.
You too. I'll talk to you soon.